And it's 6 o'clock, time for 2 hours of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, your local civil rights show here in Santa Cruz. This evening with special guests, V-Man on the crisis in free radio here and elsewhere. Special recorded interviews with Mike Rotkin on the sleeping ban, with excerpts from the new mayoral, what we call it, show. Byers, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar take power. What's the difference? We're going to talk about that. Plus, we're going to review police violence as seen through the eyes of relatives of those killed by the police in Monterey. Stay tuned.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohn, Walter Ron, Toscanini, Dan Kwan, Ken Ben, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's Got a Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Place, Clinton Place, Shopper and the Suez.
We couldn't start the fire.
Today, and for what reason was that,
Chris? For the reasons that just happened to me just prior to coming to court, which is that I was stopped by Emerson Medina for failure to stop at a stop sign.
Were you guilty of not stopping at a stop sign?
Yes, but, you know,
we all make mistakes?
Well, stopping at every single, making every single correct, but doing every single law on a bike. If you
this is a bike we're talking about.
Not if you're doing, you know, 15 miles or 20 miles, people know that they're going to give you a couple seconds to see what your speed is, or whether you're going to.
I've seen many people get on bikes.
If you don't delay a motorist by more than about 3 seconds, they usually let you go.
You know, but more important than what we talked, actually, several of us have called the mayor about, both the new mayor, Byers, we assume is going to be appointed mayor, elected mayor, and the old mayor, Celia Scott, is this a notorious situation where you were given a ticket by. Well, after four officers were banging on your van, or two were banging, and then
banging, and then four squad cars converged at the bottom of behind Stapleton's, where I used to sleep, where they now have permitted parking only, which I was blown out of, which really.
They're going after people in those parking lots a lot these days, and apparently not just you. Remember, they're kind of hurrying, scurrying people around, whether it's the.
They're changing the van, they're taking the house.
Now it's the house. Let's proceed again to what happened. One night you got a ticket and four, and the attentions of four officers and four squad cars. At one morning, when early morning was, or what time was that first?
Early, 6:30 a.m. They started banging on the van, and I got out. I jumped out, and I'm irate, and they're smirking. Their whole attitude, Richard's whole attitude,
Officer Richard.
Yeah, and the other one, I forget his name. Their whole attitude that this is a joke, that. We're amusing ourselves, and this is fine entertainment to get my goat, and they got it, and I didn't misstep with them or anything, you know, but verbally was pretty aggressive.
You got a $162 ticket, right?
I got, the van was towed this morning.
Hang on, we're taking it step by step. Yeah. On this occasion, the van was not towed, but the next morning, they came back for you again.
I moved it. I moved the van. I've only had the van in about five spots in this whole town.
Uh-huh.
And now the van is not in the town at all. The van's been removed practically, or almost, to SoCal.
Okay, let's again go to the second night. What happened then?
I asked them if they're giving me a ticket or taking me to jail, and they said, we're taking you to jail. But then they proceeded to tow the van, which I didn't know.
Let's begin here. They took you to jail for the crime of sleeping.
Right.
This time they didn't just give you a ticket. They took you to jail under the misdemeanor provisions of the city's sleeping van law.
That's right.
Which provides for up to 6 months in jail.
I think they can do that on an infraction, though, also. Because
only if you don't sign a ticket.
If the crime is likely to continue, like if they come at 12 o'clock, and you're sleeping at 2 o'clock.
That has been a claim, but I have never actually seen that done recently under the sleeping ban. It used to be a claim years ago that they could do that and take you to jail, but mostly that was done in misdemeanor trespass cases or something like that. You're likely to go back.
Infractions, as you know, are not supposed to be jailable offenses. And therefore, you know, there's this whole process being suggested that people use about taking me to a magistrate, which is problematic at this point, but used by some people. But they can definitely take you to jail under a misdemeanor citation. And apparently, I guess, did you get a misdemeanor citation?
Yeah.
It's 9.36.050, if I'm not mistaken. And at the same time, and more seriously, what you've been...
And I was willing to stay in jail. That was a Friday, Dr. Emes Mala was going to keep me in medical confinement, which is solitary,
right,
and probably force all that dope that they give schizophrenics.
Uh-huh. Were you acting in a, colorful manner?
No. The so-called medicine is garbage that anybody should be with.
Why was he considering this?
Perhaps because I called him a quack.
Face and to those other people,
loud tone of voice, or did you simply assert that he was a quack?
I can't remember.
Anything you say may and will be held against you in the court of public opinion. In any case, the more important aspect of this whole second ticket was that not only were you taken to jail, not only are you facing 6 months in jail and $1,000 fine for this ticket.
Yeah, but they won't.
They usually go after
they'll
that.
They'll hold you or...
And they'll drop a charge.
If I don't sign this, you'll take me and give me a warm place to take a shower for a couple of days,
right,
after maybe 5 hours in holding, but get housed for a couple of days and get out of it, you know, because it's storming, as it was the last few days, and today it's all blue. I would have done that had they not been this other anxiety, angst about possible doping.
Because of the Prolixin and stuff. And
all the crap that he wanted to give
now,
me.
Now, the thing was also that... the thing you didn't anticipate, and it happened, and it so upset you, and it would certainly upset anyone in your situation, is not only did they put you in jail, but they took a legally parked vehicle, your in essence your house, and towed it away, right?
I thought I had, I thought they would have to post it 3 days as inoperable, usually the way they had done it, and then I'd get 3 days. But upon your arrest, they can now seize your car.
It's the instrumentality of a crime, and apparently your van is one of the key culprits in your being able to sleep at night.
Well, right. Well... It's absolutely necessary to have it. I don't think I can survive the kind of nights that some people are going through without it.
Survival
almost 42.
You cannot survive because surviving in this case would be criminal behavior. And we know that Officer Richards probably told you that criminal behavior in this city is not tolerated, specifically sleeping in a vehicle, and therefore taking your vehicle seems to be the only course.
They're ratcheting up the stakes. The stakes are much higher, you know, if they can pop you for 110 plus 25 every day.
Now, you went to the city attorney to talk about this.
I went to the city attorney to become irate with him, I showed him the law.
Mm-hmm.
And
he actually called me.
And I said, this looks like illegal seizure. And he said something like, no, it looks like a legal statute.
Yeah,
when I asked him if it was legal, because
what he told me by phone, he left a long message, he was very upset that you followed him around, said he was going to get a TRO, because he didn't like your, he thought you were berating him and calling him names and treating him and his staff abusively, but who knows what I would have done had something similar happen to me. He said that indeed it is, as you point out, legal under the vehicle code to tow a vehicle if it's an instrumentality of a crime. Don't go away.
That was Chris Brosda. In an interview earlier this week, Chris is a man who served 70 days in jail this summer for offending a merchant, or was it offending a police officer? We're not sure. None of the charges for which he was actually picked up were ever the basis for a crime against him. Rather, they pulled in some prior probation violation after having held him past the 45-day, or actually 30-day limit in jail. If you're being held in jail on a misdemeanor crime, they can only hold you for 30 days before releasing you or trying you with a jury trial. And part of that time he was held in psychiatric confinement against his will. He was not allowed access to a psychiatrist to challenge Salazar's rulings that he was in need of psychiatric. The phrase is either gravely disabled, the danger to oneself or danger to others justifies their taking away your liberty, rights, and so forth for 72 hours and then for 14 days and after that for 30 days on a conservatorship. And they did this on the grounds of gravely disabled the summer to Mr. Brozda by claiming that because he lived in a vehicle, he was unable to take care of himself because he had no home. He, in essence, was crazy, or, you know, couldn't care for that. Actually, crazy wasn't the word. And this is really completely outrageous. And this latest attack is outrageous, and even not only does it show the abusive behavior of a few police officers, if we are to believe Mr. Brozda, like Officer Richards, but it also shows a practice that apparently is happening to other people living in their vehicles, a sort of a process of driving away people who live in their vehicles by, as Chris Brozda put it, raising the stakes, ratcheting things up, putting on the pressure on poor people. You're not only going to lose money and liberty for a while and maybe incur a lot of tickets on a van and then sitting there and starts getting tickets while you're in jail, but if they're going to tow your van, because even though it's legally parked, they're going to claim it's the instrumentality of a crime because you were sleeping in it, then we've reached a whole new level of persecution. And indeed, a level which I described talking about this case in a flyer that was broadly distributed before the current coronation of the new city council. That new council came into power on Tuesday, the 24th, and they had the power through Catherine Byers, the new mayor, who was a continuing member of the council and also on the old council, to put on this new council's agenda something to do with either ending the sleeping ban provision that gives the police the pretext to do this, which is the misdemeanor section of the sleeping ban law, which says sleep twice in 48 hours, you're guilty of a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. That's the only basis on which they can really seize your vehicle. I suppose they could try to claim that your vehicle is necessary to seize as evidence of an infraction crime, but that might be a little hard for even Artichoke Heart Attic, one of our local stiff-lipped judges, to swallow. So had the city council put this thing on the agenda to reconsider this vicious law, particularly in the midst of winter weather, particularly in the midst of 3,000 signatures to strike it that we got earlier this year when we attempted to repeal the sleeping ban and put that initiative on the ballot, 3,000 signatures at least to give the voters a chance to talk about it, in spite of the fact that the candidates who won were endorsed by organizations which had also endorsed ending the sleeping ban. And these candidates themselves had one way or another endorsed ending the sleeping ban. Nothing was on that agenda. And worse, this is the sad thing, nothing has been promised in any particular timetable before the winter. There is no plan for a December 1st special session. There's only one session ahead of us on December 8th, and there is no plan for a December 15th special session. There will only be one city council meeting in December, and it takes two meetings to change a law. Even after those two meetings, there's usually a 30-day waiting period unless they get an emergency statute, which requires five of the city council's seven votes. And unless some vote materializes, they only have four. But even those four are apparently afraid to commit themselves to any kind of timely schedule for avoiding hypothermia, abusive practices by police, and many disruptions around this issue for the winter. I'm getting an incoming call. I do have a guest in the studio, but let's take this call.
Hi, Robert. Hello, Robert. Hi, this sounds like David Silva, the committee to repeal the sleeping ban.
The sleeping ban is about to be repealed, and we don't know when. We don't have a schedule. We've got some gauntlet laying down by the new mayor to announce to people that we definitely will revisit this and decriminalize this somehow. We've got a promise from Keith Sugar that there will be some adherence to, there'll be something tied in as a winter crisis measure. He's referring to the sleeping ban as being toast. We have the acceptance speech, or the whatever you call it, first speech of Chris Cohn, also referring directly to the sleeping ban. But we do not have a schedule, so, you know, my fast schedule depended on them doing something substantive.
Now let's clarify, David. Yeah. You have talked about and actually readied yourself after a year's worth of organizing efforts around a potential.
Probably a year and a half already, isn't it?
Oh, it's getting on there. Yeah. You were the outreach coordinator for the initiative to repeal the sleeping ban, and then you this summer, when that repeal fell short of signatures, you went into intensive closed negotiations with Scott Kennedy, Don Lane, Karen Gillette, and others.
During which time, also, I fasted just one meal, and I didn't eat after 4 p.m.
And you began this fasting schedule with the aim of not blackmailing, not pressuring, but simply an expression of conscience in the manner of Mahatma Gandhi.
Well, purifying myself so that I don't, you know, come from to decisions on this out of resentment, because there's a lot of iron-fistedness that's gone down and with the opposition towards us on this issue, and now that we had them at the table and they're going to bring the police and park rangers to the table, I thought it was important for me to be as pure as possible, pure of mind as possible.
But of course, they
not to blackmail, but to try to create some sacred space so that agreements could be honored.
But they never brought the police and the parks and rangers
to
the table.
Well, I think the sacred space was dishonored, and so then I went back into my leaving the first meal after giving the city council after the negotiations were abandoned by Scott Kennedy and handed over to Catherine Byers, giving them at least two meetings, and after that second meeting, them not doing anything, and it would have been the last one, the 17th of November, would have been the last one they could have done something, begun something. Rather than leaving the yoke on the new council, they could have actually done something. I began my fasting process then. I gave up one meal, and my intent was to give up one meal starting yesterday, another meal, in other words, only have one meal starting yesterday, which would have made it nice for Thanksgiving, because most people only have one meal anyway. And it's all stuffness from there. But
you had to have here, there.
I decided that they offered enough for me to at least put it at, not to go either on, you know, escalate the fast or to go off the fast, but to keep it in gear at no suppers until December 8th, at which time
David,
I want to hear something substantive, or else I will go directly
clarify.
Yeah.
David, that you're a man whose health is to some extent precarious. You're an HIV positive man with AIDS. You've had AIDS for what, two decades?
Well, you know, actually, it does seem that it was 1977 when I had my onset. That does seem to be what the UCSC Medical Center and my doctor.
Boy, that predates most AIDS by 5 years.
Yeah, but I was right at the core of those early ones that died. You might call it the first wave. All my friends died. You know, 40 closest friends died between 81 and 84.
So, of course, I don't approve of this fast. I got to tell my audience.
Yeah, I know. Neither does Arun Gandhi, by the way. Arun Gandhi says, no, David, you cannot fast. The people must be out in the streets demonstrating, and they must fill the jails in order to stop this law.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we tried a little of that on on Wednesday, and we got a small demonstration, and we spoke about the issue to passersby, and a number of people stopped and talked to us, and we're going to be continuing.
Yeah, what about
process.
Monday? Is the last day of the month again?
Let me finish this first.
Follow our sleep fast.
Let me just quickly get this.
Sure,
Robert.
David. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That on Friday we had hoped to begin a kind of a 2 week period or 3 week period of protests during the Thanksgiving to Christmas season, when merchants and the merchant process of getting shoppers in and Christmas and so forth is at its height, and when in a certain sense, because of the media focus, and a little of this is very artificial, but nonetheless, it's true that there's this focus on compassion during this period, and if anybody wants to, you know, throw a dime at a person, they're likely to do it at this period more than, let's say, the middle of the summer or something. So we thought about doing a protest.
Unless Linda Steino conducts some campaign otherwise.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be showing up tomorrow at 3:30 down in front of the what's called Hippie Planter at Lincoln and Pacific, right in front of New Leaf Market and Juice World, to continue this process of educating the shoppers, educating the public.
I think educating shoppers, but not alienating maybe a good percentage of the businesses that might be supporting us at this time, is probably very smart, Robert. But educating the shoppers is important. Let them see the existing law and compare it to, you know, just scratching out references to sleeping. And I think it's easy to persuade people once they see the existing law. Yeah, I say go for it. You know, but keep the pressure on. I think we ought to do this sleep fasting on the 30th too, and actually challenge the council members to not sleep that night.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about this thing on the 30th?
Yeah, the sleep fasting we began when we first saw that our initiative drive was not going to make the ballot. A little earlier than that, started this opening up the negotiation thing, and that was a closed process. But our open process for everybody to participate in was not doing these sleep fasts at the last day of the month. And we had different ones that accentuated different things. The second one, those people that already had tried to stay awake all night, we said try doing it without a blanket, or, you know, put a blanket over your shoulders and walk up and down Pacific Avenue. Just accent the blanket ban. And then we sort of did a different theme each time. Some of them were somewhat successful in terms of people remembering to call in the next day and call City Hall and say, hey, I was not able to stay awake at night. What kind of law is this? Or whatever their story was.
So another one of these is coming up on the 30th.
And I believe that by people participating in these kind of, you might say conscious reasoning, I hate that phrase, conscious reasoning kind of protests, that we really get serious about what we're fighting for. We're fighting for, you know, people to be able to sleep, something that we can't even in our protest be able to reach. Most all of us try to do it, weren't able to do it, you know. I mean, is it a program to try to turn the homeless people into speed freaks or what? You know, what's the purpose of this law?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just not tenable.
I think
we need to remind ourselves of that constantly when we're still in the struggle.
If we can get the current city council to pull its head out from under the blankets, we might be able to do something. And
yeah.
I know that you and I actually kind of am the odd man out. There are a couple people who agree with me, but I think more who agree with you that the city council made some positive statements at the city council's opening coronation, as we put it.
But like, and I say, it wasn't enough for me to go off my fast, just enough to sort of put it on hold, because it was like,
There was no schedule. David, I'm going to be playing.
Sure.
I'm going to be playing what I regarded as those completely inadequate statements.
Oh, you're going to play excerpts?
I'm going to play the entire statement.
Oh, okay.
So
from all the candidates, or?
Well, yeah, there were only Fitzmaurice and Sugar made no statements. I listened to their whole tape. The only people that made statements were Byers,
Crone,
and Crone.
And Scott's leaving statements, you know, she opened with repeating the sleeping ban.
Celia did make a statement. I'll have to dredge that one up.
Okay,
She opened
with repeating the sleeping ban as their number one failure. You know, she listed her failures, and that was
number one.
Well,
I don't think she used the phrase repealing the sleeping ban, but I think she may have talked about the issue in the kind of gentle, dexterous, tenuous way that she usually does.
Yeah, she does.
Similar to Byers, which I find contemptible, because you and I know the issue is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And if they can't use pretty straightforward words to discuss a pretty straightforward thing, we're in pretty bad trouble, in my view.
Well, she's got a lot of environmentalists to tin with. I think her words, if you can catch it, the tone in her heart is heard. And it pained her heart that this law is still on the books. I think she expressed that.
Well, I know that you're a man of great. You probably have greater compassion for Celia. I tend to have greatest scorn for council members who have the entire town behind them, or just won a victorious election, but can't seem to find the appropriate terminology.
Well, and I always say, let's save your scorn until we're really sure they fucked us over.
Well,
here comes the old boss, same as the new boss, or what?
You and I are both in good shape, of course, because we aren't sleeping out tonight.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I talked to many people in line today who are going to be out there and in the cold, and I think they got fucked over on the 24th.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, I'm a dissident voice.
Let's call it the ceremonial council fucking over.
Ceremony,
ceremonial council fucking over.
Well, you know, David, perhaps what we should do, I really want to get back to my guests in the studio, but I don't want to lose you. No, you're doing fine.
I can call back after you play the excerpts.
That's what I was thinking. We're going to be playing, you're listening, of course, listeners to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I missed the first
You're
first
one
bit.
Of those listeners, too, 96.3 FM, and if you want to join this conversation, we're going to be talking to the V-Man on attacks on free radio that are coming pretty close to home.
Yeah.
But also,
scary time.
If you want to call in and talk about the sleeping ban and the new city council, we're going to be playing excerpts from the new city council tape. Number to call in, of course, is 427-3772 here at 96.3 FM. David, call us back.
Write letters to the press, write letters to the council, write letters.
Yeah, and before you, I would add to that, call the city council hotline now, tonight, even though it's the middle of a holiday. In fact, it's the best time to get through.
Actually, yes.
call 429-3550, 429-3550, and then push the pound key, which will put you into all the council members' boxes and say, this is my suggestion, we need a special session, we need an immediate agenda, we need an end to the sleeping ban and the towing of vehicles before Christmas.
Please, everyone call.
Actually, we need it. We need assurance this will be on the agenda before next week, because that's our last chance.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, David.
Okie dokie, okie.
And that was Dead On David Silva. Whether he's dead on this occasion is one of the questions that we're going to be discussing here in the studio. With me here is that skeptic and man about free radio, also a cop watcher and a sometime demonstrator. I saw you at the demonstration the other day, Vinny. The V-Man. Vinny has his own show, and he's really covered this. I guess last night you did a very extensive analysis of recent attacks on free radio in different cities. How you doing, Vinny?
Good. Actually, last night I was very irresponsible and I left all of my news at home. So I was planning on covering this extensively on your show today.
Good.
First, I'd like to
turn over the mic to you so you can begin to do that. Would you prefer to kind of take control
take over the airwaves?
Yeah. Actually, he's putting on his own music. He's throttling me. Wait, Vinny, you know.
Give me the mic. Anyway, I would like to take over for a few minutes just to go through a couple of stories that I missed last night, and I want to thank Robert for the opportunity to be on the air in such a great time slot. Actually, I'm never on in prime time, baby. Anyway, so first and foremost, the most recent news out of the world of micro radio, and this one's fairly local, Tree Radio Berkeley. Yes, that's right, I said Tree Radio Berkeley, has been operating out of a tree 60 feet up in the air on the frequency of 104.1 FM since Monday, November 23rd, to protest recent FCC raids on micropowered stations across the country and to demand a public forum with the Federal Communications Commission to urge them to adequately license micropower radio stations. These activists will broadcast nonstop atop a tree in central Berkeley to demand an end to the string of micropowered radio station closures and harassment by FCC officials. The most recent update I got was yesterday, day three of the Berkeley tree sit in Willard Park. So far it has been great. The two activists have been broadcasting 60 feet up in a tree since 2 p.m. on Monday. There has been much media attention, and including locally here on KCBA Fox News, but anyway, and it's only increasing with time. The FCC came out today, yesterday actually, Wednesday, and tried to serve them with a notice of stop it, according to this news release, but could not deliver it because they could not reach that high up into the tree. They left promising that they would return with federal marshals and show us who's who. There's been tons of community support. People stop by and cheer them on. The activists have no plans to come down as of yet, and they are supported by a large ground crew. Stay tuned for further news on Tree Radio Berkeley. If you're up in Berkeley, go by Willard Park. It's just down the street from Shattuck Avenue, and support micro-powered radio. Another good news story here. This is actually about two or 3 weeks old. Radio Free Vermont in, of course, Vermont, Vermont's hometown radio station, has won a judgment by default in a challenge of the FCC's jurisdiction regarding intrastate commerce via radio. That is intra, not inter, that being in within the state of Vermont and not broadcasting across state lines. As specified by Title 47 of the United States Code, Sections 151 and 152, the Federal Communications Commission has only interstate and foreign commerce jurisdiction and does not have intrastate, that being broadcasting within a state's jurisdiction. This victory is the second against the FCC in jurisdictional challenges. Since the FCC defaulted, they may no longer pursue any action whatsoever against Radio Free Vermont. And if they attempt to interfere in the future, the FCC and each agent will be in violation of Title 18 of the U.S. Code, which is criminal prosecution and prosecuted as such. So now, apparently, Radio Free Vermont is solely regulated by the State of Vermont Department of Public Service. You can check out the details on this if you are online at www.sover, that's SOVER.net/TildeRFV.
Does this mean that, do we know if the are the Vermont authorities going after the station, or we're not sure?
From what I've looked into this very, unfortunately not too extensively, as to read all these briefs and legal motions that have been filed would take probably 3 days to go through all of it, but my understanding of it is that what happened is the FCC tried to challenge Radio Free Vermont from broadcasting without a license, and this radio station apparently has some funding from somewhere, because they are actually a low-power commercial FM station. So they are broadcasting without a license, as we are here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, but they do, however, run ads, and they sell ad time on their airwaves, and that is how they pay for equipment upgrades and stuff. And honestly, I think also this station is not really covering a lot of the local issues that we cover here. They're not, you know, it's mostly a music entertainment type of station. So it's somebody that wants to be Howard Stern or, you know, one of these other DJs that works at a commercial radio station, but they just don't have a license, and they probably don't have a lot of money. But it is political in that they are taking on the federal government. So
I don't know if the state government is coming after them, though.
That I do not know. I believe not that they've been left alone from the state so far.
The reason that's significant, of course, is that we are not likely to be heard in any other state here in Santa Cruz, and if this precedent affected us and the FCC couldn't touch us, the question would arise what authorities would come after us in the state hopper of bureaucratic busybodies, and I don't know that the answer to that question.
Yeah, that is something to be learned, I suppose. I do believe that it would be Vermont's own state constitution that would come under. So I mean, it would probably be different here in California as far as a jurisdictional challenge if they, mm-hmm. If we did challenge them in that capacity. But I just thought it was worth mentioning that they, won. Some other stuff here recently. Of course, you've heard about Radio Free Memphis, Free Radio Memphis, operating at 94.7, who was shut down in September of this year. By the FCC, raided, and their equipment was confiscated, everything was taken away. They had resumed broadcasting on the same frequency with a new name. They called themselves Black Cat Radio, and they started on Halloween night, their first rising from the ashes, so to speak. And just this past week, last Wednesday, November the 18th, they were busted, broadcasting from a van from the University of Memphis, and here is the official news release from that. This comes from, what is the person's name? Sarah A. Dirks from the Commercial Appeal, which is a paper out of Memphis, Tennessee. University of Memphis security officers homed in on a pirate radio station broadcasting from a parking garage and knocked it off the air for the second time in 3 months. Officers arrested two men and a man Wednesday, November the 18th, on suspicion of theft of services using university electricity to power the unlicensed 20-watt FM station. They had not been charged as of late Thursday afternoon. Unlicensed operators also could be subject to federal fines and imprisonment. The station broadcasts commercial-free, politically left music and news, sometimes live, sometimes taped, and could be heard roughly within a 3-mile radius of the campus. Free Radio Memphis, like I said, was shut down in September by the FCC, but was reborn Halloween night as Black Cat Radio. A flyer circulating around on the campus says soon after the murder of Free Radio Memphis, the severed soul of the station coalesced and built a new body as dark as the shadows from which it emerged. It is pure sound, a vibration rich in the dark thoughts of the evening, with a voice that refuses to speak in the blindingly obvious light of day. Created by an organization called the Constructive Interference Collective, the station was broadcasting about 4 hours a night on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The seven-member collective is dedicated to legalizing microbroadcasting to, quote, open the airwaves, said Kieran Crosswhite, a 34-year-old real estate agent, come DJ, who hosted a midnight blues and poetry show on the station. Pirate radio, micro radio, is too big to be silenced, said Crosswhite, who said he is not a member of the newly formed collective. The startup station began broadcasting in May of 97 from a house on South Ellsworth, but was shut down when FCC and federal marshals confiscated all the station's equipment. On Wednesday, Richard Lane, chief engineer of public radio station NPR affiliate WKNO-FM 91.1 FM, used a directional frequency locator and pinpointed the station's signal atop the parking garage on Deloach next to the Fogelman Executive Center, according to a University of Memphis arrest report. Do you want to add something?
No.
Okay. More into the story. The broadcast that day began around 7 p.m. and was still airing at 8:48 p.m. when campus security was alerted. Officers found a brown 1988 Dodge Caravan parked on the otherwise empty garage top. Through the van's open rear hatch, officers saw the mobile radio station, a transmitter antenna, coaxial cable, and a meter that measures output to feedback. The equipment was powered by lines running from the van and plugged into one of the garage's electrical outlets. University of Memphis security confiscated all the equipment. About 250 unlicensed radio stations nationwide, quote-unquote, pirate radio frequencies to broadcast illegally, said Marvin Benzman of University of Memphis, professor of broadcast law. The FCC shuts down unlicensed stations, arguing their signals can interfere with licensed operations. They're being held without being charged for a crime, and they are what I would consider to be political prisoners, said Jonathan Cook, 27, a U of M graduate student who, as Irregular Jonathan, hosted a political show with commentary and international music. Whether the station is reborn again depends. The first thing we've got to do, he said, is get these people out of jail. They have been released on a $100 bail each, and they are awaiting charges in the municipal court, I guess, of Memphis. So, I am, real quick, I want to add that the Bust Response Action Network, which is sprung up on the internet after a station in Florida got raided, is calling for an action alert. Call, fax, write, or email WKNO, the public radio station in Memphis, and let them know about Richard Lane and how you feel. If you'd like to contact them with a letter of protest, send it to WKNO-FM, P.O. Box 241880, Memphis, Tennessee, 38124. That, once again, WKNO-FM, P.O. Box 241880, Memphis, Tennessee, 38124, or you can phone 901 area code 325-6544. That's 901-325-6544. Fax them at 901-325-6506. That's 901-325-6506. Or email wknofm@aol.com. That's wknofm@aol.com. Let them know how you feel about a public radio station, so-called public radio station, helping out the feds and the police and locating a pirate radio station operating under the guise of the First Amendment, which I want to remind you is free speech. So, Robert, if you'd like to add anything?
Yeah, sure. No, I just wanted to kind of interrupt you just for a moment because I don't want to eject you yet into the rain, particularly. Who knows? You might get arrested for sleeping in your vehicle if you had a vehicle, but... you know, the real thing that Free Radio Santa Cruz has been concerned about here, and we've been on the air 24 hours a day with some significant exceptions, but certainly for the last 6 to 9 months, pretty much. You may clarify that, I guess.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that area. Probably one of the few stations in the state that has been doing that, that I'm aware of. Other stations have been broadcasting somewhat, but certainly not 24 hours a day as we have. And the... you know, we've talked a lot in the past, or some in the past, about how the station has been attacked by the FCC at different times, where FCC agents have snooped around. An FCC agent came to, I understand, the area in front of the station and tried to get past, but was skillfully intercepted by a 12-year-old girl who told them that they needed a search warrant, and they backed off and went away. In fact, I was around for that one. They didn't serve us with any papers at that time. It's difficult to talk about this on the air in the sense that if we, for example, had recently gotten papers, we wouldn't want necessarily to make that admission legally before consulting with the attorneys and running through all that crazy stuff. But I can tell you that the station is under significant pressure now, more so than it has been, in my opinion, at any time in the past. Now, I usually put out a pitch for Free Radio Santa Cruz around this just by saying, you know, we are really vulnerable. But there are concrete reasons to believe, and I can get into this. I'll be getting into this at future shows with the permission of the collective when I have their permission to understand that that this station may be shut down at any time. And it is more of a pressing crisis than it has been, I would say, than any time in the 4 years that the station has been 4 years, 3 or 4 years. We've been in
in, you know, on the air. Would you agree with that, Vinny? You're kind of closer in touch with this.
I wouldn't say there's any immediate threat of that happening, but yeah, the axe is always constantly hanging over our heads, and I would say it's been a little closer lately with some recent circumstances that have arisen, which we shall not get into, but one thing I do want to mention, Section 301 of Title 47 of the United States Code is the law that the FCC claims that we are violating in this operation of this unlicensed radio station. And I would like to read to you exactly what Section 301 of the U.S. Code Title 47 is. And it's License for Radio Communication or Transmission of Energy is the title. It is the purpose of this chapter, among other things, to maintain the control of the United States over all the channels of radio transmission and to provide for the use of such channels, but not the ownership thereof, by persons for limited periods of time under licenses granted by federal authority, and no such license shall be construed to create any right beyond the terms, conditions, and periods of the license. No person shall use or operate any apparatus for the transmission of energy or communications or signals by radio, A, from any one place in any state, territory, or possession in the United States, District of Columbia, to another place in the same state, territory, possession, or district, or B, from any state, territory, possession of the United States, or from the District of Columbia to any other state, territory, or possession of the United States. Blah, blah, blah. Or from any place in the state, territory, or possession of the United States, or in the D.C., to any place in any foreign country, or to any vessel.
English.
Anyway, that's basically, it says that you can't operate without a license. And it goes on to state, or places beyond the borders of said state, or any vessel, except as provided by Section 303, or upon any other mobile stations. Now, there's some other interesting ones. They say that's what we are violating, Section 301, and it goes on and on, but the constitutional argument is the biggest one that microbroadcasters have mustered up to challenge this bullshit law. And, by the way, this was mandated in 1934, so we're talking about a law that is at least 64 years old now. That's good math, 64 years old, and it's pretty outdated. I mean, when you look at the advancement of technology and you look at the First Amendment to the Constitution, you would definitely conclude that what they were talking about when they wrote the First Amendment to the Constitution would apply to radio, the ability to broadcast over the public airwaves, as much as it did back then apply to the printing press and the free speech of people to be able to hand out the written word. And I think that they would apply that to what we've been engaged in.
Free speech, which we might add, is under attack. Here in Santa Cruz, as we know, one of our local street spirit vendors, Steve Argue, was arrested, dragged off to jail, brutalized, charged with misdemeanors and felonies, then disappeared, held in isolation, and released on Monday after being held on $5,000 bail with no charges, just 4 days in jail to his credit. And he incidentally has a protest coming up around that, a protest of police repression of free speech in Santa Cruz. Want to kind of bring this in here, not to completely move you out here, Vinny, but that's coming up on December 12th, Saturday, at the Santa Cruz Town Clock. And again, the organizing we're going to be doing tomorrow around the issue of the sleeping ban down in front of Juice World and New Leaf Market will also be concerned with police misconduct. All these issues are really intertwined, particularly the local issues. The attack on free radio means an attack on communication about local concerns and problems. It means people like Chris Brozda, whose voice you heard at the beginning of this hour, would never be heard in any form. And he's actually, there's a restraining order barring him from many public functions at City Hall. I think he is allowed to go to city council meetings, but he wants to complain to the city manager, wants to talk to the city attorney. I think he can still talk to the city attorney, but there are a series of increasing restrictions on him, partially because of his own abrasive behavior, but also because these officials want to insulate themselves, and because they're engaging in unconstitutional behavior, which I feel they don't want to have publicly shown. So protest is, I think, a very significant way to maintain our station here. You can follow Vinny's suggestion and contact the Tennessee folks and tell them that this Richard Lane snitch character needs perhaps a more suitable line of work as a prison guard rather than, let's say, an FM programmer or whatever he is. And if you, by the way, miss any numbers, any phone numbers, you can call after the show to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And just leave a message that you would like us to get back to you with this such and such number, and we'll get back to you. And if you want to join this discussion, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris with The V-Man, our resident expert on Free Radio. Spends a lot of his time covering what's going on nationally, internationally, and locally through the internet. 427-3772 is our number if you want to give us a phone call and join this discussion. We're going to begin be turning, actually we're going to take a little brief voyage away here to hear a Free Radio Big Sur broadcaster talk about his station. But Vinny, before we go, I know there's more you want to say. Why don't you continue for a bit, and then we'll slip into this Big Sur interview. Okay.
Yeah, I just would like to again reiterate Robert's point there, how these issues are all tied together and intertwined, as he put it, especially regarding free radio and free speech out on the mall. These are all fights that have been going on for decades now. This free speech struggle, and it's taken on many forms. And this is the current incarnation right now, is the right to broadcast over our airwaves, because these airwaves really do belong to us. It is the Federal Communications Commission that has, at the behest of the National Association of Broadcasters, stepped up its enforcement on local pirate radio stations locally and nationally, and are taking them off at an alarming rate. And the tactics that they use are ever increasingly more brutal, as witnessed by the November 19th, 1997 raid on all the Tampa stations down there, the Party Pirate and Ronnie Cobras of Lutz Community FM. And there was also another station. They were raided by an enforcement team which included FBI, DEA, local and state SWAT teams, as well as the Federal Communications Commission. So you can see how they're using ever more repressive tactics in taking us off the air and denying us our right to free speech. And we do have an incoming call. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hi, this is Thomas Van Staver in the FCC. You have you surrounded right now. Throw your microphone out the window and come out. Just kidding. I want to make sure you guys are all ready to go there.
Yeah, we are. We got our armed guards at the door here.
Okay.
You ain't coming in,
Carl. Yeah, go away, man.